everyone, I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Roll Route, to the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between food production and food consumption. It is a Tuesday. That means that Andrew Henderson's checking in an hour earlier from the UK. Jay Truitt, well, he's on the same time zone as the rest of us in Central Texas. What's going on,
right on,
Jay? You've been out fighting fires?
How are you, Jay? Sorry I missed last week. I wasn't very well, you know.
Yeah, I understand you played hooky. I just thought maybe this week you'd be like in Italy or Portugal or in the plains of Spain or something, trying to explain something, right? Some excuse.
Why?
Like, I found a dairy farmer in a foreign country, so I decided to go see him, and I'm going to sell him some stuff, and that's why we had to load up all of our things and travel to a warmer climate for a week. But no, I'm glad you're better, though.
I am better, and as I say, I actually think now that it was a very short-lived illness, but, and I think it was, believe it or not, food poisoning, but hey, ho, happens to us all.
Well, I've had that happen before, and it is a nasty experience for people that have never had food poisoning in a kind of a serious way. It's a real thing.
Yeah, it is. And as I say, I was very lucky because it was very short-lived, so maybe my constitution is where it needs to be, thankfully. Yeah, so, but I'm raring to eat whatever I want now, and hopefully my stomach will be able to take whatever I throw at it.
Yeah, bingo. Yep, that's the big win.
Jay, I can't get a lot of good data from Texas. I just have the basics on the impact of the fire. Like 1 million acres have burned, 100,000 cattle have died. What do you know that's really going on and has gone on?
Yeah, I think we probably all have the same sources, right? And I've called people that are in that area. They think that number, they think the million acre number for sure is a bit low. And you can hear about anything you want about the number of cattle that may have been trapped or caught in the fire and lost their lives. So I talked to some folks over the weekend that were right in the middle of the whole area. And they actually thought that more animals had probably been evacuated out and were in like temporary holding areas or temporarily out of danger than what had initially been reported. But then I get kind of a quick text and the guy said, hey, I'm just out driving across down an old oil field road that cuts through a guy's place. And he goes, maybe what I told you before is not right. There are a lot of animals out here that got caught down in some of these little low places and got surrounded by a fire, basically, that burnt them from all four directions, right? And, does it matter that we know exactly what the numbers are today? Probably not. We all want to know. I think, and there's a lot of people here that are trying to figure it out. Sid Miller and I aren't on a first name basis, but he has people that are on this thing like white on rice. So I would expect that Texas will have a pretty clear assessment within the next few days.
Well, I happen to have Sid in my phone, and Sid be call him today on my drive home from Bismarck, because that would be just excellent. He would have an update. Andrew, that
right.
Sid Miller is the commissioner of the state of Texas in agriculture.
Right, I'm sorry. Yeah, for everyone else in the world, literally, that doesn't track Texas ag commissioner people, Sid's one of the folks that has been involved in Texas agriculture for decades now.
And the interesting thing about Sid in Texas and even in North Dakota, where I happen to be at the moment, the director of agriculture are commissioners because they are elected instead of appointed by the governor, right. And there's not many that are in that position, but that brings an extra dimension to the election of a commissioner instead of the appointment of a governor, because you're talking about everybody voting on somebody that may not know anything about agriculture.
Yeah, and increasingly in this state, at one point in Texas, everybody was kind of connected to ag. Even if you were in the oil and gas business, you don't drill oil and gas in very many towns. Well, there's a couple here. Wiley, Texas has an oil well in the main square. Yeah. But mostly you're out dealing with people in agriculture, so they're exposed to them. You know, they have those daily conversations, and the people in the industry, even if it's the lawyers and the geologists, et cetera, you'd know that when you talk to them, they know the difference between a bull and a steer and a cow and a heifer, and, you know, they don't use the terms incorrectly, et cetera. Again, increasingly in Texas, as we become the state that has what once was going to be three big urban areas, probably is going to turn out to be five major urban cities. El Paso, if you look at what's going on in El Paso, it's going to be part of the mix. San Antonio, Dallas, Fort Worth, which I consider one, and Austin and Houston. My goodness, right? There's literally tens of millions of people in the state that don't know a cow from a sow, really.
I don't know whether I misheard the question, but these fires in Texas, you know, even the governor of Texas said they're extremely concerning, because he says they're not like normal fires. Normally something's left of the structure. They're completely gone. There's nothing left, he said. Now, the other thing is, it points out that 88% of the cattle in the whole of Texas are concentrated on this one area that's been hit. I mean, it's amazing how nature can work that out, isn't it?
That's a different deal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of that's a deceiving number too, right? And that's where, because a lot of those animals, when you start looking at the actual numbers of cattle that are inside the state's boundaries, right? If you're not careful, you're counting feed yard cattle at the same time that you're trying to count cattle that are out on the range and were really exposed to danger. There's some feed yards were exposed to the fires as well, but for the most part, the cattle that were under the initial risk anyway were all cattle that were out grazing. And yeah, in that respect, it's nowhere near 88% of the cow herd is not in that region.
I mean, Jay, to Andrew's point, hold on, Andrew. To Andrew's point, that region of Texas is where the cattle feed yards are. So it would make sense that the numbers would be there because you have more cattle in that area. But they're the cattle in feed yards. They're not the cow-calf sector, which Texas continues to be a bumping 2 million head of cow-calves. But the damage has been to the cow-calf sector and the mama cows that are running out on the range.
Wow.
Yeah, and again, to my point, that damage is more lasting, right? And honestly, it's more devastating for the most part. It's a little easier to get an insurance policy to cover all kinds of acts of God in a feed yard than it is to really ever settle one out on this. And
Well, it's also easier to do mitigation to keep the fire away from a feed yard than it is your
exactly.
pasture.
Right,
you can do things to protect the perimeter where those cattle are based.
It's a small area, So
why would so many firefighters and people involved in fires over the years, especially what you would call agricultural fires like this, why have nobody seen fires like this before? They're saying that aluminium road signs have melted and stuff they've never seen before. Why is that? What could cause that?
Well, we've been in prolonged drought here, right? And this that part of the world is part of the grazing pattern there requires you that you never really graze off everything. Even in a drought, you don't graze everything off because the grass grows a little bit slower on a regular basis. Most of that grazing land is short, warm season grasses. And so now, and the winds just happen to be like the most ferocious thing that could have happened. The timing couldn't have been worse for a bunch of windstorms to come through, which is not unusual for that part of the world. I grew up out there, and you can sandblast your car to shiny metal on a regular basis if
you
want.
I'm going to sandblast this segment into the next segment, and we will come back with more Roll Route. Jay Truitt, Andrew Henderson. Before we let you go, I want to remind you about Great Plains Cattlemen working together to produce a tender supply of beef. It's called Certified Piedmontese. Not many Piedmontese cattle in Texas. They're in the northern Great Plains from Kansas to North Dakota, Colorado, Montana. You can get more information to consume as a consumer at cpbeef.com. Here's the deal. You don't need to go to the store. We deliver the tender beef to your door. cpbeef.com. More Roll Route after this. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce, alongside Jay Truitt, Andrew Henderson. You mentioned how things are different. There is definitely one thing that is very different with this fire than what we've experienced in the past is within a week, XL Energy admits that they had a problem that led to the start of this fire. They also provided a call number for claims and people in the keep in mind, Andrew, there are several fires that have happened in Texas. We're now talking about the biggest one, which was the Texas Smokehouse Fire. But, Jay, I don't ever remember a company within a week saying, by the way, we caused this fire. If you got a claim, call us.
Yeah.
What the heck is up with that?
Well, I think it probably was one of those things where you mentioned before the break that the governor had engaged in this conversation, or Andrew mentioned it. And I think it's one of those things where the political folks weren't looking, they weren't looking for a conversation, right? And a big dodge. They sent people out and started saying, hey, listen, the source of the fire is you. You're going to figure this out. You're going to take care of, the impact of whatever decision you made that caused this fire to occur. Well, good for them. There's a lot of people that don't really like Greg Abbott a whole lot, but they like him enough, right?
And I don't think that's got anything to do with it, surely, whether they
like
him.
Wait a minute, though. He's not a purist conservative, but he is a conservative. I would call him a conservative by today's standards, for sure. The thing that you can give credit to him more than almost any governor in recent Texas history, for sure. The thing that includes George W. Bush when he was governor, is his staff is absolutely great at executing their mission. And I mean, they get the job done. And so when he says, I want to make sure this happens, his staff makes sure that happens. And at the same time, I would guess maybe that the real fear was that if they didn't respond, that Ken Paxton would be on their door, because the same thing goes for our very controversial attorney general down here, that people love to try to charge him with all kinds of crimes, but they hate him because he will take you to court as quick as anybody that you're going to find anywhere, and he doesn't care who you are or where you're from.
Well,
what your politics are. So
I'm guessing that you're in the truth zone there. I'm looking at some aerial footage as we speak from a town called Fritch, uh-huh. F-R-I-T-C-H, and it is amazing how discriminate this fire was. It would demolish a building to the left and not touch a building to the right, and then immediately to the right of that building, demolish the next one. It's really quite bizarre looking at how that has happened. I mean, really is. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. You would have thought that it would take every building, but it's very, very selective. there you go. Maybe there's a reason for that too. But there's an awful lot of buildings without a mark on them.
Yeah. Without knowing more details, I would say wind. We've had the strangest wind patterns I remember in my life in the last 30 days.
Yeah, okay.
And so,
and
again,
talking about wind at 50, 60 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's just a weird dynamic, you know. And again, in that part of the world, there's nothing like lots of places in the central plains of the United States. There isn't anything to stop the wind either, except for a building maybe to slow it down. Well, that means that it's the building slowing down the fire just long enough for it to either consume it or blow past it, one of the two. And
Jay, I am going to launch a complaint right here and now against Ken Paxton, your attorney general, because last week, my attorney general, Mike Hilgers from Nebraska, actually is leading a brigade against Facebook, thanks to what's happening with my Facebook account. And there are now 41 states and the attorney generals who have signed on to this letter from the attorney general, Mike Hilgers, to Meta, and Texas is not one of them.
Well, could be because they're already in a Supreme Court case against Facebook. And so they may have already covered this territory at one point. They have a case before the Supreme Court currently against most of the social media companies that have violated their the state laws here. And it also, to be honest with you, no offense, but it could be because he's like, he and the AG in Florida are the only ones that took on the pornography industry in the United States to ensure that kids couldn't just surf it on their phone literally while they're in a class. They couldn't get signed up to a program without having to go through an extensive verification process. And I mean, it's one, you know, I guess I have one thought process that goes on if it's an adult that's viewing all that material. It's another thing, though, when my six-year-old grandson can lie one little time and say, well, sure, I'm 18 years old, and then open up a world of pornography.
I don't care if you're an adult in a school. There's no place for pornography.
Do what now?
I don't care, even if you're an adult in a school, there's no place for pornography.
Yeah, no.
But I do think that Jay's point is right, that I'm hearing as well that Texas has taken a lead in this trend, and he may be right that's why they, because from my understanding, all of the attorney generals that are supporting what's happening in Texas. And that may well be why Texas itself is excluded from the actual group of states that are supporting them. Because I think it is Texas that's leading the way on this one.
Yeah, Texas, and the Florida AG has been really instrumental in the early parts of this. And Texas and Florida were both the two states that actually passed laws on two fronts. One of them on this pornography front, the other one was on the social media companies themselves. And I haven't really tracked that case like I probably should have, and it won't take me very long to get up to speed, so next week we can talk about it again. But
Florida's on the list and signed the letter.
I'll call them.
Interestingly enough, the District of Columbia is on the list. Illinois is on the list. Hawaii's on the list, but no Texas.
I'll call down there and find out.
California's on the list. California's on the list and no Texas.
Yeah.
This is messed up.
It must be a very poor bill if California is on the list. So there must be
the District of Columbia. Good grief! That's probably why they're not on it. Basically, it's just to protest that. I'll call somebody and ask if I can't get a better
report later today.
Just what I gave you just now.
Well, just in summation, I know that there are people from all over the country that have already begun. It happens every time. And the best part of the United States of America shows when you have a situation like we have here. And it creates another whole conundrum, which is I know that right now there are people in Texas scrambling to figure out where to put hay that's arriving, where to put the fence posts, where to put the barbed wire. It causes a major conundrum, but it is the best side of the United States because in a time of need, people just drop everything, load a load. No matter what hay is worth, they'll load a load of hay and they'll head to Texas and they'll say, where do you want me to put this? It just happens every time.
Yeah, I'll just make a brief comment about that. And you're right. It's a great problem to have. The thing that aggravates me about it is literally that the media, the generic media, and even most of the non-traditional media will report this based on government help, assistance, or something else. That's what they will report happen.
There's
just like they do with hurricanes and tornadoes and private donations and not-for-profit donations, not including Red Cross and those kinds of groups, but just churches and other people. In every single case, when you really dig down into the numbers, their assistance is 10 to 1 over what the government ever does to help.
In our flood in Nebraska in 2019, the individual donations were off the charts. The state and the government assistance was just a nightmare. They were talking about things and had no way to execute them. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more Rural Route. It's already halftime. Jay Trutt, Andrew Henderson, I'm Trent Luce. I want to remind you that Greg Hager continues to write every song that he performs. He continues to influence people and bring everything back to reality. That's what we need, a dose of country roots so that we can keep this nation in boots. And that's what Greg Hager does on a daily basis. Check him out online. Buy an album today, greghager.com. Second half, Rural Route, just ahead. Welcome back. Rural Route, Trent Luce, alongside Jay Trutt, Andrew Henderson. Do you ever have big fires like that in the UK, Andrew?
No. We don't have big fires like that in the UK, but I can only think that if we did, we had a couple of years ago in the Dorset Downs, and we had one in Scotland. But there's a huge investigation. I'm assuming that's the same thing that happens in the US. Although some of your investigations do seem very, very light. You know, look at the derailment that you had at East Palestine. Look at what happened in Hawaii. Look at what happened in January the 6th. I do think that your protective agencies are completely corrupted. They have to be for these things to happen the way they do. I mean, you've got a president telling everybody that the world saw an insurrection and not one person got killed.
One person did get killed.
Yeah, but they didn't even find anybody that's supposed to have caused the insurrection with a weapon.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really quite astonishing.
You cannot
what
put,
we see and
you can't
see
put
from
January 6th in the same context as a train derailment. They're two completely different things.
Well, they're both examples of how you investigate things, Trent. They are both examples of how your police pretend to be investigating
January 6th. All they're doing is trying to intimidate people in East Palestine. They just like, oh, well, it happened. We'll move on.
Well, it's the same. It's whatever narrative they want you to believe. And you have to say the Hawaii one is the biggest of all of them because it's completely ridiculous what happened there. And yet, you know, people just seem to ignore it.
Yeah, I got to agree on the Hawaii front. I think we get into this space sometimes and the train derailment does raise a different question in the fact that it was a favored company and a favored political entity that had a horrible accident that destroyed millions like literally hundreds of millions of dollars worth of property, and kind of did really spread fear across everybody that has a freight train that goes past them and with a bunch of tanker cars anywhere near their home or residence in America. And the simple fact is the railroad industry is controlled by, in the United States, controlled by literally a half a dozen people, and the vast majority of it is controlled by one.
Yeah, and, Warren
in
Buffett.
Omaha, right? And he has enormous political sway in the United States. And so I think there was, that's a different situation. January 6th, Trent already said it's exactly right. That's a political, that's just the political narrative. Hawaii, though, I got to admit, there's like, I can't explain that one away, other than just complete failure of everyone involved at every angle of government. Some to the local folks, but the federal government just completely failed in Hawaii. There's no way you can describe it any other way. It's a complete failure. And
so, Jay,
what do you say?
Let's shift gears a little bit, because speaking of the news of the day and how it just fades away, and people today make decisions in marketing based upon the information they have. And I think this is relevant when we talk about a fire.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
6 months ago, in the heat of Russia invading the Ukraine, which I say that tongue in cheek, because I still believe they're there protecting their people. That's not relevant to my discussion. What is relevant is that every farmer in the United States was told that this is going to cripple this breadbasket of the world and the Ukraine and Russia, and we're going to have a shortage of grains. And it, people, I can't even name all the friends that I have that did not sell corn for $7.50 because they were told this Ukraine-Russia thing, the breadbasket of the world, is going to be crippled, and we're not going to have feedstuffs for the world. And, well, now their corn's worth $4.50 still sitting in the bin. And it happens all the time.
No, it's not. The Polish farmers are massively blockading because they're trying to stop cheap Ukrainian grain from coming across the border because, frankly, they've got a bumper crop. And how they've done that in the middle of a war is quite amazing, isn't it?
No, that's the issue.
No,
the misinformation that came out.
That's Trent's point.
It is. That's my point exactly.
Not amazing at all. Okay, so let's go back to when all this first started, right? When the military actions first started. I talked to a gentleman. Now this is one of my specialty areas, so I was able to give somebody a call and say, hey, what percentage of the total ships that are available in that whole area are tied up in Ukraine right now? And it was a massive percentage. So it's something like 61% of the capacity was either had to unload in Ukraine before they could load and get out, or were waiting to be loaded, or were stuck in the line between those two bookends. And most of those ships, those aren't Pan American sized vessels, right? They're not stuff that's going all the way to China. There's stuff, most of that trade is local. It goes down to Turkey, maybe to Jordan, and then they circle back, and then the Turks and the Jordanians read it, do the distribution to the rest of the world. Same thing on fertilizer, and we went through the same thing. Fertilizer prices went literally through the roof. They doubled, then they doubled again, then they doubled again, and in some cases they doubled again on top of that. We had people paying $2,000 a ton in the world for DAP fertilizer, and the reality is that we really didn't have a shortage. We just had a bit of a distribution issue. Now, all of a sudden, though, the Ukrainians have figured out how to export. And I just find it just amazing that as soon as Poland has a big crop and has figured out how to export, already pre-sell a bunch of their crop into their markets, that all of a sudden now, Ukraine has figured out that, oh, wait, we can export. And maybe it's just 2 years in a 2 year period, everybody figured out how to do the logistics in wartime. But, I don't know. It just seems to me like a like a weird scenario. And again, U.S. farmers, we're like the little bitty piece of filament that's right on the end of a bullwhip here in that process. They got whipped all the way from one end of the spectrum to the other. And the snap is what you're hearing right now is people literally are selling corn in the United States for about half the almost half the price
of what they could have got.
What it was, yeah, just a few months ago. A few months ago. If you really measure it out, right?
So basically, you've given all this money to Ukraine to put your own farmers out of business. That's a good deal, isn't it?
That's exactly what
we bargain at any price, right? Yeah. I mean, to bankrupt the center part of the United States. I don't very often call him out, but I mean, I think everybody knows that. The very fact that Tom Vilsack in the middle of all of this is out on the climate tour instead of on the world grain distribution tour kind of says almost everything you need to know about our Secretary of Agriculture.
He almost didn't show up for the farm bill discussion.
Nothing.
Our farmers can't afford to sell their grain because it's cost them more than it's worth. Yeah. Because of this, we've actually, it's like turkeys voting for Christmas. We've paid to put our own farmers out of business. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that's when Trent says, you know, these subsidies, we need to work without subsidies. Well, we need to look at all the implications of geopolitical decisions, because here's one that is causing farmers left, right, and center by design, I would add, to go out of business. By design. Listen, every time a politician goes to Ukraine, it's like they're going to the Oscars or something. They meet Zelensky in some beautiful palace somewhere, and there's certainly no war going on in front of us. And
well,
it's just incredible.
At the same time, what are the two groups of people that are protesting worldwide against just generically what's happening in government and how government is interfering in their business? It's truckers and farmers. And truckers are the number one ally of farmers, because most of the grain in the world actually moves by truck at some point.
Not only the grain, but the processed food
Once
the food is manufactured into a product that's consumable, the trucker once again hauls it from the manufacturing to the retail.
Yeah. If there's going to be an uprising of people worldwide, it will always start with the primary industries. It will always do that. It'll start with farming, and then it'll precipitate into distribution. It's a hierarchy of needs. It's very obvious that that's why it's happening that way, because they're the only people who can say, "Hold on, this is all wrong."
But I want to bring a new sector in to be the uprising, and that's the people who are ultimately going to pay the price. Because the farmer will find out a way to feed himself. The farmer will find a way to generate electricity or energy, I should say energy needed to survive. The people who live in the cities are sitting ducks. They're not going to have access to electricity. They're not going to have access to food. They're the people we need to get this message to so that they can say, hey, this is a shipwreck. We can see it coming. Let's turn now.
Yeah, you're right. The trouble is that the rhetoric is that there's no home for them to go to in terms of a political organization. And secondly, they'll say, as an individual, we can't make a difference. That's how the media has made the majority feel. And that's the truth. How many times have I seen people say, yeah, we know what's going on, but there's nothing we can do about it? And that, I'm afraid, is the attitude.
I agree, obviously, with what you just said. I think the core of that, though, here in the United States, is that we've crossed over this bridge kind of permanently into the celebrity worship scene, right? And if Taylor Swift was motivated about solving this issue, it'd get solved.
That's a good place to say we got to go to another break. I want to remind you about something else that's a vital element of healthy living. Not only CO2, but nitric oxide. That's one of the elements of the atmosphere as well. In fact, 78% of the atmosphere is nitrous oxide. I take a nitric oxide supplement every single day. I suggest you do the same. Don't take my word for it, though. Get the science from Dr. Nathan Bryan. He has it all laid out right there on the website, NO2U.com, NO2U.com. And if you want to get a free shipping coupon, put Trent. It doesn't go on a ship, it just gets shipped to you, NO2U.com. More Roll Route after this. Welcome back. Trent Luce alongside Jay Truitt, Andrew Henderson. Did you notice, Andrew, that every time I need to go to a break, it's Jay that's waxing on that has to be shut down?
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
I don't know what to say.
No, I don't think there's anything to say. I think that you were making
some
good points.
Hey, listen, I was, many moons ago, I was in the radio business. I know what those little clocks mean. So I was just trying to back time, Trent, to where I think your breaks are. I'm not for sure what it is, but I was just filling it. Otherwise,
11, 13, 13,
Taylor's
so you know.
You know that new Beck globalist background that he's got? It's all power. It's power. Why do you think I'm sat here with my power? Not a little white mug like that. I'm here. Just balancing the power.
Yeah, that's what it is. Trent Luce, corporate media.
Yeah, that's me.
Trent Luce, corporate media.
Unlike one entity in ag media, I did not get a subsidy to the tune of $31 million to perpetuate the myth about CO2. One ag media company in the United States did, and most of you are listening to them. And in listening to them about the Ukraine, by the way, think about that.
Yeah. I'm glad you actually said that, because that takes us back to what really should be happening is at the Ag Outlook conference, which was just a few weeks ago, right? The whole conversation should have been about the 50%, near 50% decline in the price of some of our base commodities. And instead, what was that conference really all about? It was about
perpetuating smart agriculture.
Perpetuating the ideas behind Biden's 50 by 50 and 30 by 30 plan, conservation easements, sinking carbon in the soil, our goodness gracious fear of CO2 levels in the atmosphere, which caused both severe rain and severe drought apparently at the same exact moment, and and the fact that climate change is our only real concern in agriculture. And I wrote a piece for some folks yesterday that angered a good number of people, but the other distraction that's taken place in some part is the fact that even USDA hasn't seemed to figure out how to engage, as well as any other federal agency, in this whole foreign ag land discussion when it comes to the places that are near a military installation. Instead, they want to focus on the ones that really aren't anywhere close to a military installation, and they're fine with states passing laws to ban those, but wait, the actual purchases that are owned by members of the CCP, nobody does anything about that, because they don't, those are contributors. Those companies are contributors to political entities, maybe not in their local area, and actually in most cases not in their local area, but to other people inside the political process. And
did you see what Iowa did last week in the state legislature, Jay, in involving foreign ownership of land? Senate file 574. They are removing the restrictions from foreign land ownership. Completely removing them.
Yeah.
But they're all playing games with you, Trent. Just stop letting them. Just let it go over your head. They're playing games with you. playing games with all of you. I mean, it's.
I think this whole thing. I agree. I think the whole thing is a giant distraction away from something else.
That's been my story from day one, by the way. I'm sticking to it.
It's what? Say that again, Trent.
I said it's been my story from day one. I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the way that things are developing at the moment, and the one thing that I find quite interesting is that the narrative is getting less and less popular with the majority, especially when it comes to the not just carbon footprint but climate change as a whole. You've only got to look at the sales of electric cars to know that the public are saying no. The sales of new sales of electric cars in the UK have halved in the last 6 months.
I went to a Ford dealership the other day, and just drove through the lot. They had, and the reason I pulled in honestly was because I saw about 200 pickups on the lot. Wow. And I thought that's crazy. Maybe I can finally find an F-350 work truck, right? Somewhere in the middle of all that I kind of had an eye out for. And as I drove around through there, I realized that I'd been punked, and that out of the maybe over 200 trucks, 150 of them were Ford Lightning that are now being discounted, and there's still nobody out there walking around looking.
Hang on, wait a minute. Please tell me they didn't call the electric pickup a Ford Lightning. Is that
true? That's what it is. Yeah. No, that's what it is. Yeah.
Only in America. Lightning Only in cars. America. Lightning cars. Yeah. I can imagine the guy, buy your Ford Lightning, and Lightning will charge it for miles. My goodness me.
Yeah.
Really?
You just drive it during the right storm. You and Benjamin Franklin can make her go.
I can't wait.
Does it come with a little antenna? Where it captures like a lightning rod and it fuels it as you go?
Trent, why haven't you bought one of those? I would have sat in one of those gladly for a
He couldn't. No, because I can tell you why. Trent doesn't even have to answer that question. He doesn't have enough range to actually get to where he lives. So he'd have to drive all the way to Omaha to buy it, and it wouldn't make it to his house. And he'd have to buy like a 40-mile extension cord to make it work.
No. What's new? Most of Trent's pickups don't seem to get him home, so that won't be any new.
That's actually a true story.
That's not fair.
That's not good as I sit here 450 miles from my house.
Jay. Hi, I'm Trent Lewis. Have you got a plug? Somewhere in the middle of North Dakota. That would be brilliant.
Do you
mind if I use your plug? Great one.
I was in Kildare this week, and some friends were telling me a story about some students that had to come and do some research at their place, and they were coming from, I think, Belfouche would be 250 miles away. 40 miles from there, they had to stop in Dickinson and recharge for an hour before they could finish the journey.
No, I pulled up on a job site the other day, and I could hear a generator running, and I didn't understand where it was. And literally, the guy, so this wasn't even like a temporary thing. He had bolted the generator down to the fifth wheel hitch, had this really cool little setup where he could just snap the generator down. And I said, what do you think of your Ford Lightning? He goes, well, I guess it's all right. It uses 8 gallons of diesel a day to run the generator so that I can actually get home at night.
You know, Jay, we're not thinking about this. This is where you and I need to put our heads together. You remember back in the day, and I had a friend, and I drove it thousands of miles, had an LP tank in the back of the pickup, and converted the pickup gas engine over to LP. Well, if we could get natural gas, because it's like 2 cents, and put it in a big tank in the back of our pickup with a little generator, buy this Lightning, which we could probably get for 10 cents on the dollar, and we could be manufacturing these things from electric into LP running on a generator and make a killing.
Oh, I've had exactly that thought run through my head, and I'm pretty sure somebody could help you fix the wiring where it would all be just automatic, right? They make little controllers for this, that, and the other. No, I literally have thought about that. Yeah, and maybe I'll do it lightning powered by. We have a brand new compressed natural gas station just not very far from one of the developments that we're building in Dallas. So that powers all the Amazon trucks that are out there, interestingly enough, right?
That's an interesting little twist.
Yeah, they seem to be moved towards the CNG route, and actually they're claiming that they're trying to source renewable natural gas, which is made from cattle manure up where the fires are in the
renewable
panhandle.
Wait a minute, what's sorry
no they're burning their natural gas that's derived from manure out of big operation a big
it'd
new
be
operation
dairy. It'd be dairy.
But that's
in
not,
the panhandle
that's, there's nothing new about that though, is there? I mean,
no. Well, it's new when they try to make the claim that somehow or another they put it in the pipeline and it came down here and it all stayed segregated, but whatever. That's all right. That's also where we produce the natural gas in the state, so whatever. I'm not gonna look a gift horse in the mouth. I hope some guy gets filthy rich selling beef and dairy manure to the unsuspecting public. And I'm just going to laugh and invest in his feed yard.
Probably. All right, Andrew,
and
1 minute.
More milk.
If somebody told me in 2024 I'd be sat with two friends talking about this absolute nonsense in 2024, I wouldn't have believed them 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, it really is. It is an upside down world, Trent. There's no other way to describe it. It really is. I mean, you know, we've been sold stuff. You say you can't sell ice cream to Eskimos. Well, the electric car is proof you can.
Yeah, Willy Wonka for president, right?
Pardon?
Willy Wonka.
Have you seen the movie? Because that's look. Do you know what? I don't want to upset you, but you'd make a fantastic Oompa Loompa.
Oompa Loompa. Yep, that's
you would.
Me.
You'd be very, very good at that, Jay.
And with that, I have to say that we've successfully journeyed down the path of connecting food producers to food consumers. For Jay Truitt, Andrew Henderson, I'm Trent Luce. All roads do lead to a rural route.
Oompa Loompa.
Have you seen the movie, by the way? Have you seen
Andrew, I've not seen the movie. Hey, I want to let you know there's no movie involved here. Simpson Farm Enterprises continues to produce what they need to generate pest control for the farmer. I'm talking about Apache sprayers. They generate reliability, innovation, most importantly, service. High Plains Apache, Simpson Farm Enterprises, both delivering the Apache machine with service. SimpsonFarm.com for details.